The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 301. I would also like to say thank you to all the folks who checked out last week's anniversary episode, episode number 300. I received a lot of congratulatory notes from a lot of people, and thank you very much. I know I've said thank you quite a bit over these last 2 weeks, and I've also said many, many times that I appreciate anyone who has checked out an episode of the PVD Cast or has supported this podcast in any way. I'm going to say thank you one final time. And before we start talking about this episode, I want to just highlight real quickly that yours truly, along with the Three Geeks Podcast, the Pop Culture Addicts Podcast, Funny Science Fiction Podcast, a Mess Bucket Comics, Staunch Ambition, and a whole host of other folks are going to be this weekend, the 17th and 18th of September, at Monroe, Michigan, at the Monroe Pop Fest. It is going to be a great pop culture convention. I've gone, this is going to be year 4 in a row that I have gone. It is an awesome show. Gary does a great job. This year, I have the opportunity to collaborate with some awesome people on some great panels that are happening both Friday and Saturday. Look, Friday night, there's going to be a remake revolution that's going to go on where myself and I believe Max Andrews from Three Geeks Podcast are going to pick a partner from the crowd and we're going to kind of remake a movie. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a Three Geeks Podcast live on Friday night. Same with Funny Science Fiction as well. Then Saturday, there's a Power Rangers panel. There's a Sports and Comics where I'm going to talk to Dom Riggio and Darren McCarty, along with my partner Tim Bisegel as well. So we're going to talk all about that. Doug Jones has a panel. There's a costume contest. There's going to be an indie comics creators panel. There's just so much programming at the Monroe Pop Fest. I haven't even touched base on all the talented, great artists and comic book creators and other guests that are going to be there. Just do yourself a favor. Go over to MonroeComicCon.com. That's their web address. And yes, they used to be the Monroe Comic Con, but they're now the Monroe Pop Fest. But nonetheless, go on over to MonroeComicCon.com. Check out all the information, such as tickets, directions, who's going to be there, all that stuff, schedules. The whole nine yards is over there. Check it out. You get the opportunity. Come on down to Monroe, Michigan, and check out yours truly and all of my friends hanging out, doing lots of cool pop culture, geeky things. Let's talk about my guest for this episode of the PVD Cast. I'm going to be joined by a filmmaker by the name of Michael Messner. And Michael has created a documentary called First Year Checking. It's a hockey movie that focuses on the 12 to 13-year-old children that play hockey, because at that particular age, you learn to throw a body check. And it's kind of a little bit of a controversial topic in youth hockey, because some people feel like kids should learn a little bit earlier how to throw a body check. Other folks feel like it should be maybe something later on. And then there are those that say there shouldn't be any checking whatsoever. The thing that Michael points out is that, you know, at 12 and 13 years old, you have children that are different sizes. Some that are still, you know, 5'1", 125 pounds, and some that are 6'2", 200 pounds. And how the size discrepancy is what is somewhat alarming and problematic when you learn to throw a body check. So Michael kind of went through this with his older daughter when she went through hockey. And so when it was time for his younger son to go through this same experience. Michael thought he would go ahead and document it. And I gotta say, it is a pretty good documentary. You definitely want to check it out. And you know what? I'm not gonna talk any more about it. I don't want to spoil our conversation. So let me go ahead and throw it over to my quick little announcement about the great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. That's right. World's Greatest Comics is located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they've got tons of comics, graphic novels, back issues, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles. They got a friendly staff. They got very knowledgeable staff. They have, basically, they got it all, right? I could continue to go on and on and on. But definitely, you just need to check out the store if you're in the Central Ohio area. But if you're not, you can still check out the store by going to their great website, wgcomics.com, or following them on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And by the way, if you interact with anybody from the store, would you please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Michael Messner talking about his documentary, First Year Checking. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is the director of a documentary called First Year Checking, Mr. Michael Messner. Michael, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me about this documentary. And let's just get started by letting the listeners know, what's the premise of your film?
Well, the premise, for me, any documentary takes you basically into a place where you haven't been before or you don't know very well. And for me, I've been in hockey for 30 some odd years, and I always thought I knew the game of hockey from when kids start playing until they end their careers. But taking my children through it, I learned a lot. And what was the most surprising to me was that 12 and 13 year old age is when they introduce checking now to young kids. And so my daughter and my son were having a good time playing this wonderful, beautiful game for 3 or 4 years. And then my daughter went into check hockey first, and she said, "Dad, I really want to play with the boys still. I think I can really handle this check hockey." And for me, it didn't really click that that's what it was until that first game that my daughter played in, and there were these monsters coming after my young, poor, innocent daughter, which she isn't. She's a very competitive, she's going to be a Division I athlete in lacrosse, but it was very eye-opening for me to watch these kids go through this game that was so innocent, and then at 12 and 13, they flip the switch, and they have to be these violent kids and play a different brand of hockey. The game is completely different from 1 year to the next, basically from 1 day to the next. And the most tragic thing for me, and tragic might be a strong word, but I saw some kids who really love the game would, you know, be on Twitter and everything else with these stick handling videos. It consumed their life. They would go to hockey games for the Penguins, et cetera, et cetera. And they went through the year with my daughter's team. And then at the end of the year, they quit. They said, "You know what? I can't do this. This isn't for me. I'm too small, or I just got hit in the head too many times, or I just wasn't ready for it mentally." So they quit the game completely. And to me, that was like, oh, okay, when my son goes through this in a year and a half, I'm going to put a camera on him and see what happens. And so I did that for the first weekend for tryouts. And one of our best skaters, one of our best players, one of our bigger kids got hit awkwardly and went into the boards and got a concussion. And I said, "All right, I'm going to follow him and my son and some other kids, and we're going to see, you know, what it's all about. And I'm just going to document it. I'm trying to not form an opinion on what exactly to do or not do. And I actually love checking in the game, and I think contact sport for youth is so beneficial. But as you can see in the documentary, you can be in some really vulnerable positions, and there are a lot of things that they can do differently as a governing body to make sure these kids are safer. So that's what led me to do it, basically watching my daughter and then saying, okay, my son's smaller, not as good as a skater as my daughter was, and now he's going into this world, and let's see if he'll share his experiences with kids and help them once they start going through it too, because it doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon.
And one of the points you bring up in your documentary is that age of 12 to 13 years old, you have young men that are, you know, full grown men in some instances competing against much smaller boys who, you know, are maybe a buck five or a buck 10, and they're 4'9" or 4'11". And then you got full grown men at 12 years old. That's just the way that some kids develop. And so talk to me a little bit about, you know, when you saw those quote monsters coming after your daughter and her, and when she went through it, how did you feel as a father, as a coach, as a hockey enthusiast? Like, you had to have been really, really troubled.
Well, you know, what shocked me was my daughter played mixed year. So she was an 04. She had to play with 04s and 03s. So imagine the spread of, you know, body types and how much a person can grow or mature with basically a year and a half older than my daughter is, and how big and strong they were. And the first team we played, they had a couple of kids who were over 6 feet, over 185 pounds, and they were mean. They didn't want to, they just had their testosterone going in a way that, okay, I'm here to dominate. I'm going to try to hit these kids no matter what it is. And in that mixed year, that's where a lot of kids can get hurt because you're playing with an older birth year. So with my son's team, I kept them their 06 year, 2006 birth year. So I made sure that they would only play against other 2006 year old players, where they could be playing, if they're playing that quote unquote mixed Bantam year, they could be playing against 2005s, who are so much bigger, so much stronger. They're used to hitting already. They have a year under their belt of it, and it's really leaves them vulnerable. But my daughter, that first game, I told her and another smaller defenseman, I said, they were both defensemen, I said, don't even go after the puck. Let them get possession of the puck, and you stay closer to the goal and just let them have possession. There's no need to try to get hurt here. There's no need for you to put yourself in a vulnerable position. And unfortunately, as the year went on, both of them started getting a little more confidence. They thought they could do a little bit more. And so you try to put your body into somebody and it just doesn't work physically. And she got launched one time, I remember, from the blue line almost to the top of the circle in the air. Yeah, luckily she landed the right way, but that one was really like, she was scared. She came off and she was scared, and she never gets scared. We put the kids in a little bit too much of a vulnerable position at this age, and the gap is just, it's just really big for us not to educate everyone on Czech hockey, because the amazing thing is these kids do not have to have any schooling, any education, any extra classes on checking. They hope that the coaches say, all right, we're going to do some angling this first couple of weeks and ease them into it, but they don't have to. It can be turn that switch on and you're playing Czech hockey, and good luck, because you're going to get hurt and you're going to get a concussion, and that's just the name of the game. I hope yours isn't too harmful.
What was the reaction of your family when you pitched this idea, when you said, hey, this is what I'm going to do? What was the reaction of your wife and of your two children?
Funny story. When I was courting my wife, I made a film, and she knows I always have a camera in my hand. The kids liked it at first, and then my son was really annoyed halfway through the year, because every time we got in the car, there would be a camera in his face. Because quite frankly, I think one of the endearing parts of this film is that the kids actually give you their insights. They tell you their fears. And it's hard to get that out of kids. So for me, with him, I had to put the camera on him a long time to get his true feelings. Because at first, you know, for the first 20 minutes, it wouldn't be much. And then he would tell me, you know what, I am really scared. Or, I think I can do this. And that's what's endearing about the film, is you're really in there with these kids. It's not necessarily talking heads. They're telling you as they're going through the concussion protocols, as they're going through their first year of checking, or as they're going for their first checking clinics. So it's not just talking heads. You're there with these kids. And I've found that everyone who is into contact sports is kind of getting something from this movie, because they're like, they all kind of have the same bond. All, you know, football players who have told me, even it's been in Australia, they told me, you know, there's some people there who play Australian rules football who've had these experiences. And I think it's pretty unique for the parents and for the other players to see, oh, this kid is scared, and he's actually telling me he's scared. So it's okay for me to be scared. It's okay for me to be extra cautious out there, because you're kind of in really inside with these young kids. And my family knows I always have a camera on me, but they got pretty annoyed. and unfortunately, there's a scene where my wife is pretty hard on my son. One of the reviewers almost called me unethical, et cetera, but that's okay. But I, you know, because we kept the camera on my son as my wife and he were going through this interaction, my wife is okay with it. My son was okay with it. And they both said, this is what parents do. You know, parents react this way. Parents are hard on their kids when they think they need to be hard on them, because that gets them through that adversity. Because you don't know as a parent. We don't know as a parent. Is it the right time to pat him on the back, or is it the right time to hug him, or is it the right time to say, go do it yourself? So this was one time when my wife said, go do it yourself. Get through this. If you want to play at this level, you've got to find it. So unfortunately, she didn't look too great, but she likes the outcome and how it's helping kids. So the one critique that I get, which isn't really critique, the Penn State hockey coach Guy Gadowski, who's in the film, told me it's the most honest film I've seen on hockey at all, especially with youth sports. So that was what we're going for. We're just going for the honesty. We're not trying to pick a side. We're just trying to shine a light a little bit more on making sure these kids have somebody policing it a little bit better than they are.
Well, I'm gonna ask you about that in a few minutes, but I did have a couple of questions about some of the footage that you had in the film. You have a lot of footage of the team that you coached, but you have a lot of other footage from various other games, and I presume from other leagues and whatnot. So where did you get that footage? Did you go and shoot it yourself, or did you have some assistance in that, in the production of that, or how did that end up happening?
Yeah, I worked for a company called Awesome Films, and I had Trevor Young, who's kind of my right-hand guy for my projects. He shot some of the game action. Jeff Stick shot the interviews at the Mayo Clinic, but I also am close with a lot of the other teams just around the area. I'm kind of a rink rat, or I used to be, and I videoed a lot of the games just because this is what I was looking for, because I knew at that mixed year, that's when kids can get really injured. And quite frankly, I did not shoot a lot of games to get all of the injuries that we saw in the film, to see all of those people down with their heads hurt or their shoulders separated or their broken hands. I did not shoot a lot of extra games. I just shot early when those players weren't ready for it, because I knew there'd be somebody kind of hunting after players, and there'd be players who were trying to maybe prove themselves and not realize how vulnerable they are. So I didn't shoot a ton, but I shot at the right times and the right moments. And maybe that's a lie. I guess I did shoot a ton. Of thinking back at the games, I probably shot, 30 games. So that is a lot. And our team had 25 games that we shot at least. So you're talking over 50 games. So yes, there was quite a few, not including my daughter's games out in California. So yeah, I guess it was a little more extensive than I let off. didn't realize how long I was away from home.
You know, time goes when you're having fun, right? Time flies. Yeah. So
and the players were nice. They let me mic them up. They let me, the parents were nice. They understood it. And I would say I'm going to let you see this before it goes. And they're all just like, no, just put it out there. We trust you. And it is what it is. You know, these kids are out there and they're putting themselves out there. And everybody in the hockey community is it's a pretty honest community. That's why most hockey players that you hear interviewed are nice, because usually when you come off the ice and you had a bad game, there's going to be another dad's going to tell you, go get them. One dad's going to say, you stunk that game. It's a pretty honest community. And the kids get used to getting feedback from all different kinds of places. So they have a little thicker skin. And it's a game where you know, it's pretty obvious that you're either playing well or you're not playing well. You're hustling, you're not hustling. So, and that's the beauty of all sports, is it's just honest. It doesn't matter what your parents do, what anybody does. If you don't put that time and effort in, you're not going to get the reward. So It's another reason I love sports and why I've been involved in it for, you know, 50 years.
In the film, when you were highlighting the size discrepancies between 12-year-olds, you had a young man, I think his name was Emmett. He was much larger, number 52. I do remember his number.
That's him.
You mentioned he only played a few games for you. I'll be honest, Michael, that bugged me, because I wanted to know, why did he only play a couple of games?
Okay, that's a good point. He played, you know how I told you there's an 06 team and 05 team. He played up a year. So he was obviously ready for Czech hockey, because the way he was annihilating people in those clips. But he was a year older, so he had had a year of checking under his belt, and then we had a summer tournament that was for 2006s, which he is. So he played in that with us. And he, you know, it was obvious that he was at the right level for him, which was the year above. There were many players like him that we played against who just stayed at 2006. But he's a fabulous player. He played for the Pens Elite now here in Pittsburgh. And his dad is a coach. And his dad, he was a tough player. And Emmett is a tough player, but it's all within the rules. It's all within the guidelines. But to see him, his shoulder lines up with people's heads. And right. when you check somebody and he's probably 6'3" and a half now. He was probably 6'1" at that point. When you check somebody who's like my son in a practice, who's 5'2", there's something going that's going to hit or line up against my kid's head, or any opponent's head. And just his strength and the way he knew how to hit and still knows how to hit, he punishes people, and that's part of the game. But should that be part of the game at that age, when these kids are vulnerable? How can we train them to get a little bit more ready for it? And I'm starting to kind of see it full circle where maybe checking should start when they're really young. Maybe it should start, you know, right away, because and maybe we should just focus on anytime a kid gets hit in the head at those young ages, sit them down, get them out for a bunch of games, and help them all understand that that can't be tolerated. But the normal checks, those are going to occur. Because one last thing on this issue is, when these kids start checking at 12 and 13 years old, they've already played hockey for some of them for 6 years. In 6 years, how many times have you had to pick your head up when you have that puck on your stick? So it's natural tendency to just look at that puck and stick handle. Well, guess what? As soon as checking comes, I see your heads down. A guy like Emmett Martin, or a young man like Emmett Martin, who's 6'2", he's just going to take it off you by going right through your head and right through your chest and grabbing that puck. So there's something better we got to do. And one thing, maybe start heavy contact earlier. Or another thing is, like in Canada, you see it at different levels, they've just eliminated checking altogether so the game can grow. Because kids can't start playing at 12 and 13 right now for fear of getting checked, and they're just too vulnerable because they can't even skate. So if you're out there, you can't skate, imagine trying to take a check from one of these really big kids. We got to police it a little bit better than we do.
And I think that you cover that very well in the film, that there's not a single answer to this issue, because and I believe several of your experts says it's controversial, because there's lots of people, and I'll ask you, Michael, how long have you been involved in the sport of hockey?
I've been involved, I started playing when I was about 10 years old, so I'm 50 now, so a long time. And I've worked for Penn State's hockey team, their Division I program, for the last 7 years. So I'm still involved in it professionally. So I, you know, my whole life I've been involved in hockey, and I love the sport. I love the beauty of the sport, and I also love the contact. I love the collisions. But like you said, we got to take a closer look.
So when did you learn to check, and what was the process for that when you were coming up through the league? I mean, you know, the game has changed a lot. We all know that, you know, for right, wrong, or indifferent, it's changed. And so I'm just curious, you know, we know more now about injuries, concussions, CTE, stuff like that. But, you know, you go back 10, 15, 20 years, you know, we're just starting to learn that stuff. So when did you learn to check and whatnot?
For us, checking started right when you first got on the ice. So I was a pretty good skater, and that's, you know, that's more than half the battle. If you can move, if you can skate, you're going to be in much better shape. But I will say, when I got into trouble, when I probably had concussions, was around the 13-year-old age when I was playing high school hockey, when there's all different kinds of skill sets and levels. And so I would be playing, I was 13 or 14, playing against 18 or 19-year-olds, and I was probably 120 pounds. Playing against 215-pound kids. And I can remember, you know, you can just remember those hits where you were knocked out, you're throwing up, and then you go back in. So that was a different day and age. That was a different world. But there's still that same size difference. There's kids who are playing at the same level now. They're still 13, 14-year-olds playing high school-level hockey against 18 and 19-year-olds. And it's just flat-out dangerous. There's no, it's dangerous in football. It's dangerous in all contact sports. And, you know, I don't think there's an answer right or wrong with that. I can't imagine them ever getting rid of checking at the high school level. But then again, if you're playing high school hockey in Pittsburgh, chances are you're not going to the NHL. Chances are you're not going to minor league hockey. So your future is non-checking anyway in adult league. Is it that important? Is it that important? Or the one thing that I learned just to, you know, after the documentary was done, somebody told me there's a league in Quebec that they allow checking, but not in the neutral zones. So the neutral zone is the middle of the ice, basically, where you really start gaining your speed, where you can really have those collisions. There's a famous one with Scott Stevens and Paul Kariya, knocked him out right over the blue line. And Those are the places where other leagues are thinking more about it than USA Hockey is. And maybe USA Hockey's thinking about it a lot. Maybe they're just scared of lawsuits and putting any kind of rules in play. But, you know, overall, my opinion is right now, you just have to have more eyes on the game at this level. We have two referees. That's it. And they have to look at all the new rules, all the old rules, the goals, the assists, the screaming parents, the screaming coaches. They have to take care of all of that in the game. And, oh, did that shoulder just clip his head? I don't know. But if there's one more set of eyes, either in the stands or, you know, another referee, that could take away just enough, because we're not talking about a lot of cases during the games where kids get really bumped and knocked out in the head. But that would take out just enough, that one more set of eyes, if they're just looking for that could really protect. And more importantly, I've just been thinking about this recently. There used to be a big problem in youth hockey with checking from behind, a humongous problem. And that's how kids end up paralyzed at the older ages is, you know, you get hit from behind, you're going into the boards the wrong way, and you're just not expecting it. So they really policed it. They did a fabulous job with it. USA Hockey is the governing body. They put the stop signs on the back of the jerseys. When you first put on a pair of skates, you knew, do not hit somebody from behind. You see their back, do not do anything, or you're going to be gone for a bunch of games. You might be kicked out of the league, et cetera, et cetera. They did an unbelievable job with educating, and they just are behind on educating for head contact and the physical play. You're going to get injured if you play hockey against guys like Emma, we were talking about, who are 6'2 and just bigger than you. You're going to have to learn to protect yourself, but we've got to make sure that Emmett, Martin, and the bigger kids aren't hitting you in the head, because that's where you're really vulnerable. Some of these most of these kids can take a decent check. The ones to the head are the ones that are going to get you, because the equipment's great, but the brain just, you know, it just keeps going. If you get hit and it smashes against your skull, it doesn't matter how protective the outside of the helmet is. So there's something, we just got to get a couple more eyes on it. And I think this film's hopefully doing that. It looks like it's getting some good views. So
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Michael for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. As you know, they are a proud sponsor of the PBD Cast, and they're also your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, back issues, collectibles, posters. They got it all. So if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or if you're out of the area, you could check them out online. WGComics.com is the website, and they're even on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. And if you do check out the store, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast.
Well, one other thing I would like to bring up that I think also kind of shocked me as well was the medical staff, or lack thereof, at some at some tournaments and whatnot, which to me I think was a huge shock that there wasn't at least one medical trainer or medical staff there. And I think that that's obviously something USA Hockey has to look into, is at least making sure that when you have tournaments that you have somebody there.
Yeah, that's such a good point. There are so many tournaments where there's a kid laying on the ice and we're like, where's the MT? And they will say, oh, we don't have one. You know, mostly Michigan, they don't have them. They don't have to have them. They cost a little more. Or they have one for six games or however many rinks they have. But I'll tell you, the other thing about that is, I'm one guy coaching. I have 20 kids on the ice for a practice. I have half the kids on one side of the ice doing one thing, half on the other side. There are times when I'm watching one side of the ice in that practice, and they'll come up to me and the kid will say, "Ooh, Elliot Belli just really crushed Tanner down there," or something like, and I'll be like, "Oh, okay." And I'll say, "Tanner, you all right? Did you get hit in the head?" And of course he'll say, "No." Because either, you know, he doesn't know or he's out of it. And I'll say, are you sure you're able to play? So even in those practices, they should implement some kind of rules. Maybe the teams themselves should implement them. But I know a lot of football teams don't allow it. They don't allow too much contact in the practices. Maybe they should consider that, because there's a ton of hits that go on the practice as these kids are battling for positions and ice time. That happened that we don't see, and there's no eyes on it, let alone one that might or might not see it. So yeah, that's a great point. And the EMTs thing is, it's scary, and the EMTs aren't trained as well. And you're like, what do you think? And I'm like, some of them will say, oh, he's good, he can go back in. Others will side with precaution and say, oh, keep him out. And then there's the flip side of me as a dad and a coach. You want your son or your player to go back out there so that they're not afraid of that hit the next time. Not necessarily, you don't think you're putting them in danger. You think you're keeping them from being scared the next time they go out. So my theory is always, if you get hit and knocked down, get right back in there. I had to take a step back and say, oh, that's no good. That's no good. You can't do that. But most of the dads on my team are the same exact way. Put him back in, yell at him if you have to, you know, make sure he's not upset. If he's really crying, bring him out. But if he's not crying, make sure he's still in there. These kids are so tough to get through this. It's amazing to see these 12-year-olds that take these hits, get knocked down and get right back up and want to go back after him. It is fun to watch. I love youth sports and this one in particular.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about the message getting out to viewers of the film. It's gotten a lot of recognition, earning a lot of accolades in a couple different film festivals. How does that make you feel as a filmmaker?
You know, it's the awards. I always have a differing opinion on awards. I've won a lot of awards. I've won regional Emmys as best director in the New York chapter, which is as big as it gets. In Pennsylvania, and the awards are great to give a little bit of a shine to whatever you do, but you can always tell yourself if it's good or not, by how kids react to it. And just to get these kids who are now going into checking to sit and watch an hour and 20 minute movie, I know it's impactful. I know kids like it because my kid is on TikTok, I swear to God, and those things are like 1 minute long. And we actually had an offer from a distribution company that was going to chop it up into like 100 minute clips. The movie. I said, you can't tell a story in 101 minute clips. The people are going to get lost. But yeah, I mean, the awards are nice. And there was one particular film festival that I love that they actually filmed the judges and the people watching it and their reaction. And they told you their feedback. And it was really heartfelt. And people are reaching out. But most importantly, I think it is resonating with younger kids. And they're feeling like, okay, it's okay to have these feelings, but there's also a big reward to get through it. But the awards are nice, but I've been on both ends of the awards where I've had things that I think are the greatest things in the world, and they don't even get nominated for something, and things where I think, oh, they're pretty good, and then they win these amazing things. But yeah, so I always have a love-hate relationship with awards, as everybody does.
Well, just a few more questions here, Michael. Let's talk a little bit about, obviously, your hockey fandom. I have to ask, with two kids in the house that love hockey, did you make a backyard rink?
You know, we didn't do the ice because we're on the ice so much, but we had this old dilapidated sport court that the realtors, when we moved in, said, oh, this is an eyesore. It was supposed to be a tennis court, but there was like trees growing out of it and all this stuff. And I was like, this is the perfect place for kids to shoot. So yeah, they went out there and they shot on this sport court. It would make it a little bit interesting when they would hit a tree root and it would come up at them, but still they had this great sport court to just go out and shoot and love the game, get on their rollerblades and learn their balance a little bit. There's a couple ponds nearby and a couple friends have rinks, but we mostly get enough ice time at Alpha Ice Complex right down the street. So, yeah, we're lucky in that case that I didn't have to build a rink. I've seen people do it and just shoveling the leaves and hoping for a cold enough winter. The ones in Minnesota are fantastic. But, yeah, I am not an outdoorsman, so it would have been a one-year thing, and I would have thrown it all in the garbage. I did waste so much money on a synthetic ice rink once. For that fake ice that you're supposed to be able to skate on. Sure. And it was a nightmare. So, and luckily my wife didn't say, what are you doing spending $3,000 on fake ice? So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not good with the backyard rinks.
Okay. I put one in every winter, and there's some winters I use it all the time. And sometimes I never use it. And I've just always enjoyed hearing people's first experiences putting up the rink the very first time, because it's always the disaster. No one does it right ever the first time. It like takes you a couple of years to get the hang of it, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I have a friend whose son is probably the best 2007 in the country. His name is John Mooney. He had an ice rink his whole life, and now they have chillers on it. They have a little Zamboni. And there's a reason why his kid's the best, basically the best player in the country in his age group.
Well, how are Grayson and the other boys doing? As a little follow up, if you will, are the ones that you feature in the film, are they still playing hockey? Have they adjusted to this new style? How are things going with the boys?
You know what? Some have really taken to it. All of them are still playing hockey. I'm very happy to say they all still love the sport. My son is actually, he went to a team, a prep school, Shadyside Academy, right by our house that my wife is a teacher at. So he's the only freshman right now on the roster. And the league actually has post-grads in it who can be up to 19 or 20 years old. So he's an undersized freshman at 15. And now he's going into this world again, where there's now the possibility of 19 and 20-year-olds. But John Johnson's the coach. I trust him. And he may or may not play a lot. He's crafty. He's shifty enough that he might be able to do it. But they're also junior and senior heavy, that maybe he's doing mostly practices here and lifting weights. And that kind of thing. But all the other boys, they're doing great. The ones that had the concussion issues and the ones that had they're at the very, very end of the film, you could see I followed a couple kids for a month, and they all broke their arms the first month of the second year of checking. So they're all doing well. They're all stronger. But kind of the most revealing thing, there was an article in the Post-Gazette today on the film, in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and Grayson told the journalist that pretty much he's expecting to get a concussion at some time while he's playing, which is, you know, that's a weird thing. I don't think basketball players think that when they're playing basketball. I don't think other kids in a lot of the other sports expect to get a concussion, but he's kind of expecting to get a concussion. You know, that was a little more alarming than I like. So who knows, maybe there'll be a second year checking here coming soon.
Okay. Well, let's talk about where folks can check out the film, Michael.
The best place is just on YouTube. Just search First Year Checking on YouTube, and it comes up, and it says that you can play the trailer, and then you just hit rent, and it's $3.99, and you're all set there, and you can watch it on your Rokus, wherever you want. But we find that's the best spot to find it. It's on the Google Play and Vimeo and some other places. I think it's actually an extra buck on Vimeo, so I would go the YouTube route. And please leave a comment after you watch it, or reach out on the website, firstyearchecking.com, and let me know your thoughts. I'm always bantering back and forth with people on these message boards from Boston all the way to Las Vegas. I've been on message boards talking back with people, and kind of, I think they're surprised. Okay, this guy's answering my questions.
So the website again is firstyearchecking.com, correct?
Yes, it can be either the number one or spelled out first. So firstyearchecking.com, it takes you right to the website, and you can see the trailer there, and it'll link you right to the YouTube. And okay. You can read a little more, leave a comment in there, and we'd love to hear from you.
Any other social media, like Facebook page or anything along those lines, or just, you know, the website's the best place?
Yeah, the website's the best place. Facebook's on there, but I think the best place is going to be just the main website. People seem to be reaching out on that the best, and it's got some behind the scenes pictures and things you can take a look at too.
Okay, final question. Any ideas on what your next film is going to be about?
You know what? That is a great question. I have a few ideas, but my partner at Awesome Films, Barry Reese, he has a couple that he's done that are really good that we need to start putting an eye on. One's called Two Anthonys, and it's a film where he went into the worst section of Pittsburgh here in Wilkinsburg, and he followed a young man and about a 25-year-old man, one whom basically is a drug dealer. We didn't really know it. And the other was a freshman going into high school. And it's a sweet story on one end. I think you can tell which side that is. And it's kind of a tragic story on the other end. And that's, we've had that in the can for about 4 years. And I don't want to spoil it, but in October, the older man is getting out of jail. So by the end of the film, he went back into the bad world, and he went into jail for 4 years. So we're probably going to, you know, wrap it up with those, you know, him coming out of jail and trying to make it out, so to say, in the real world. He's a smart, smart guy who just got his life wasted like so many people do. And hopefully he'll get it right. And the other young man we know is in college. So there's a really sweet story, and there's a really tragic story. So it's really, you know, it shines a neat light on how hard it is in that world. So that's the next one we'd like to promote and get out there. And that's called Two Anthonys. So that'll be next in a few, you know, 6 months.
I like how you had to think about that for a moment. I like that, Michael.
I had to adjust that one.
You don't want to be held to just 6 months, give or take a month, you know.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you know how this world works.
Yes. Michael Messner, thank you very much for joining me here this evening. I do appreciate it.
One more thing.
Sure. Go ahead.
You got the Deadpool thing. The best goalie. I love this story. The best goalie out of Pittsburgh, or the most famous goalie out of Pittsburgh. We used to play late night hockey in Mount Lebanon, where Mark Cuban's from. This is another side, from like 12 to 3 in the morning. And it's hard to find goalies to play. But this goalie was a nut job. He loved it so much. And the only thing he loved more was drawing and art. And we always were like, come on, just play goalie, get a real job, whatever. Well, his name is Dave Filoni. And
okay.
You just know he is as nice as a guy as it comes. And he's a crazy goalie like the rest of the goalies in the world. So he's the most famous goalie to come out of Pittsburgh, if anybody ever asks you.
All right, definitely. Thanks for that trivia. I'll appreciate that.
All right, you got it.
All right, Michael, thank you once again. Ladies and gentlemen, if you will, stick around. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Michael Messner, talking about his movie, First Year Checking. And, you know, for hockey fans, if you're like me, maybe you didn't know all the ins and outs of coaching kids. And so now maybe you got a little bit of knowledge there. And maybe you formed an opinion as to whether 12 or 13 years old is the time to teach kids how to throw a body check, or should it be older, should it be younger? And, you know, again, thanks, Michael, for coming on. I do appreciate it. Definitely check out the movie on Vimeo or on YouTube, or just go on over to the website, firstyearchecking.com, and you can get more details on where it's playing. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to remind you of all the different avenues you have if you would like to get in touch with me. You can shoot me an email if you like. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just look for @PVDcast. And you can even find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. And of course, the PVDcast is available a lot of different places, including PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, as well as all those other major podcasting outlets. Just get to the search bar in that podcast outlet, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And if you listen to an episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing means you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. And don't forget, on Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a Facebook broadcast of this week's episode. You don't want to miss it. And you know, again, it's just another outlet for you to hear this fantastic podcast. Once again, that's at the Facebook page, @PVDcast, Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a great Facebook broadcast. It's a lot of fun, especially if people have questions or comments. They can interact with me. So there's a final way that you can hear the PVDcast. Hey, and if I can, I'm going to make a suggestion that you check out the Three Geeks podcast. It's available over at 3geeks.ninja. Check out all their great content. They got a whole lot of good stuff. And as I mentioned before, we're going to be at Monroe, Michigan's own Monroe Pop Fest this weekend, the 17th and 18th of September. Check out MonroeComicCon.com for all the details, tickets, directions, etc., etc. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.